Welcome to Leisureman Podcast, a Sunday night radio show. Perloff, we got a lot to get to. A couple of things. The NCAA hoops scandal. We differ completely on the fallout of that one. Steph Curry, we're kind of going to place him. Where is he on the best players on earth? Tiger Woods.
Oh, man, we're throwing out some big names right now, Paul.
Our good friend John Schuster. We're up USA Curling. We're
Schusty.
We basically won the medal with them.
Yeah, the Leisuremen were part of that, in my opinion.
A lot of Blake Bortles talk, the good, the bad, the ugly, and then there's some new cars. There's a lot going on. Dating.
We have a lot going on tonight.
Stick around. Listen to the podcast. We are unshowered. We are ready to go. We've been shut out of the cafeteria. There's a lot going on. We're going to overcome this.
Yeah, so we arrive in Stamford at NBC Sports headquarters, and it is quiet. The Olympics has wrapped up. I have a perfect analogy, Paul.
Just to preface it, the past 3 weeks have been like Mardi Gras at this place. Every time you walk in the building, there's nice people greeting you, getting you pumped up for the Olympic coverage, giving you like cough drops and Advil and coffee, and there's food. And the cafeteria is packed with food. The cafeteria here is so good. The people are so nice. And all of a sudden at 5 p.m. Eastern, it's all shut down because all the work is in the hay's in the barn, and tonight is the closing ceremonies, which are, that's it.
Absolutely. It reminded me of a scene in Animal House when the fraternity, the Delta House, gets suspended and Boone and Otter are the last to find out. They walk in and say, why is everyone in a bad mood? Wormer dropped a big one. They're like, wait. So they're like, let's go on a road trip. I think that was pre-road trip. It felt like there's like a little bit of a post-Olympic haze setting in.
Yeah.
And you and I are in a perfect mood because – let's face it, we haven't had to do much international travel for these Olympics.
Yeah, real curious. We were watching the end of the Olympics, by the way, and on NBC and NBCSN, they had all the credits. And I saw like a couple of my students from Sacred Heart. I was all proud. And you know, some people, lots of people we know. I didn't see the Leisuremen.
No.
Even, you know, you didn't have to put the Leisuremen, Andrew Perloff and Paul Papps. You could just put Andrew Perloff and Paul Papps and put us on the credit. We worked hard the past 3 weeks.
Yeah, what would you describe? How would you describe our role?
Top tier supporters, viewers of the Olympics. I mean, I watched all day and all night. You did too.
Yeah, I think we put in a lot of hard work on our couches. It's weird. I don't think that we were acknowledged enough. I enjoyed it very much.
Maybe I missed the credits. You know, they're going pretty fast. But I mean, we were at least in the bottom third of supporters of the Olympics.
I believe that we belonged on the credit, but that's okay. I think that people are now sort of transitioning to the post-Olympic. I think there's going to be a little hangover here, Paul.
So you're saying this 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern, the Leisuremen Sunday night, is the official Olympic wrap-up show that NBC is.
Actually, you're right.
They let us do the wrap-up show.
Right. They're like, you know what? You guys haven't played a major role in South Korea.
Put a bow on it, boys.
Yeah. So are we ready to put basically this Fortnite into perspective?
I love Fortnite.
Is the Olympics a Fortnite or is that Wimbledon? I don't even know.
I don't know, but it sounds really good. I love when the British guys say it. Oh, the Fortnite. I didn't try British accent. I wasn't going to try. Yeah, let me pat ourselves on the back a little bit. While everyone else has been jumping on the curling bandwagon, USA men's curling, they won the gold, one of the best events of the past month, one of the best Olympic events to beat Sweden. The 5-point throw of the stone of the rock by John Schuster. Guess who was way ahead of the curve on John Schuster? We had John Schuster on our show 6 weeks ago, maybe seven.
Yeah.
He was a guest of the Leisuremen podcast.
He wasn't just a guest. We call our regular guests Leisuremen correspondents.
Schuster.
I say Schuster is an obvious Leisuremen correspondent in the Wisconsin, Minnesota, sort of Canada area.
I felt like we won in the Olympics. Now, there were five guys. Thank you for that sound. Because that's what was going through my heart and my head when we won the Olympic men's gold medal for curling. Schuster, the guy with the mustache who I love, who's Matt Hamilton.
Oh, yeah, like a sort of in-shape Andy Reid-looking guy.
Yeah, like Andy Reid's in-shape son.
Yes, exactly. You know, and Schuster at one point pointed up, I think he was pointing up over the poles, which is how you could travel from South Korea to Connecticut to thank us. I think he was pointing to Leisuremen.
Again, everyone's going to try to get John Schuster and the boys on this week. We were way ahead of the game. We had him on. And we actually said to Schuster, if USA wins the gold, are we invited to the celebration party? He said, done deal. We went back and listened to the audio. Now, that's a binding contract where I come from.
Yeah, now where is the celebration party?
Don't know. Schuster did not return any of my texts.
It's curling. I feel like the celebration party is going to go on for 3 months. Like, in fact, curling itself is a celebration party.
I think we should get direct flights to Duluth, Minnesota, which I'm sure there are a ton of, and make it for the parade. Because I'm not saying we're on the main float, but we're in the middle.
Now, I noticed, I watched it, but we're going to get into your viewing habits, but I did see the end on tape delay.
Right.
The celebration for winning the curling gold was not exactly the miracle on ice. It was more like polite handshakes with Sweden.
And people were calling it the mirror curl.
Yes,
on ice,
which I like.
Which is great.
But instead of jumping up and down, they politely handshake their opponent and say, very nice job. And then they all handshake each other and pose for a photo.
Well, it's unlike like a kick that goes through the field goal and you run off and celebrate or a home run, Joe Carter. The other team at some point concedes. So they have a little meeting, and they're all, you can see them all, and they turn around and put the handshake out. Once you put that handshake out, you can't return it.
Oh, is that why there was so much handshaking going on?
There's a lot of conceding going on.
Okay.
And there's a certain point where you can't score anymore, and you can't overcome the deficit.
Yeah.
And as soon as that team turns and puts their hand out there, that's the official Olympic concede movement.
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't exactly like Brandi Chastain ripping off her shirt or like guys jumping up and down or the women's ice hockey team. It was very sedate, but I still liked it.
It was a blast. I'll tell you a little bit. So this is the grace of God. I don't know. As a sports fan, I got lucky. I'll be honest. I tried to stay up. Was it Friday night to Saturday morning at 1:35 a.m. Eastern? We live in the Eastern time zone. Was the start of the men's curling gold medal match. I'm like, I'm staying up, man. I took a nice nap.
Wait. You said to yourself you were going to stay up.
Yes, I was.
Okay.
Because I don't have anything. I'm not that busy on weekends. I can't lie to you. You know me. I'm not that busy.
Okay.
I got a couple kids, but they can make their own sandwiches. And so my wife and I went out for a little bit, and then I went home because the babysitter had to leave early. So I got home at like 10, crack a cold one. Next thing you know, 11:45, I fall asleep.
Of course.
Dead asleep.
Yeah.
I tried my best. About 2:40 in the morning, I woke up from this weird dream, and it wasn't a bad dream, just a weird dream.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, oh. And I went to the bathroom, as middle-aged men do. And I looked at the clock, and it was 2:45 a.m. I'm like, oh, man, I want to see who won USA Curling. I figured it had been done. I figured hour and a half or so, how long does curling take?
Takes
a while. Check my phone, and I see people giving me the Paul Pabst snug late alerts about curling. I'm like, it's still on. I ran to the living room, grabbed a Guinness. In all seriousness, I grabbed a Guinness because I wanted the support, and I put it on, and they were starting the seventh frame or seventh end, as they call it. And that's when John Schuster threw a rock that knocked out Sweden's rock, and they scored 5 points in a tied match. And it felt like, like when Julian Edelman caught that ball off the ground.
Did it really feel like that?
Yes. I was excited.
Now, that's a pretty big moment. So you're saying it was like a Joe Carter home run? I mean,
it was.
I guess the game
was. In that sport, it was, because it was a tied match. It could go either way. Of course, it's a tied match. Of course, it could go either way, Paul. But he got 5 points in one throw, which is unprecedented in the curling community.
It is?
No, not at all. I thought probably happens often. But not in the eighth frame, the eighth round end of the men's curling gold medal event. And Schuster is a pariah in the industry. He was made fun of years ago. Deadspin said, get rid of this guy.
They did?
Yeah, Deadspin called him out and said he's the...
What the heck does Deadspin know about curling?
Barry and the boys were just calling out Schuster over there, saying he's the guy holding the team curling down. So this was redemption moment. I'm dead serious.
I'm not asking questions to doubt you. I'm genuinely asking questions because I'm curious. So you picked up a lot. Watching it live, I guess, really, like, you were into the drama.
Well, you and I have tried curling before, and what I learned is that everybody can do it. Not everybody can do it well. Like any other sport that looks easy when high-end guys are doing it, men and women, you got to – I mean, the nuance of turning the rock an inch this way, an inch that way, 1 inch in the angles of the repercussions of hitting the other rocks changes the whole match.
Yeah, I watch it, and I don't know when or why they're sweeping. I have to admit, the strategy of sweeping is a bit of a mystery to me. I kind of get the speed.
Right.
I definitely get the speed, but it seems like that is what you really – that's where the nuance is, when to sweep, right?
Yep, absolutely. But congratulations, John Schuster and the boys, everyone in the Olympics, U.S. and otherwise. Seemed like it was an Olympics without incident, which is great. I mean, I'm talking big incidents.
Yeah, I mean, like
– it felt like that.
Well, if you look big picture, I think the North Korean and South Korean unification sort of put – sort of positive note starting on international diplomacy. Russia was probably the negative headline with a few people getting caught, more people getting caught doing PEDs.
Because Russia had a bad couple years coming into this.
Yeah.
Basically lost their naming rights for lack of another word.
But I totally agree. It was a lot of positive stories. I think there were some new American stars like Chloe Kim, Red Gerard. So I think it was a really good Olympics.
Yeah, I thought it was fascinating. Dale Earnhardt Jr., the former NASCAR driver, and if you don't know who he is a household name in NASCAR. He is the household name in NASCAR. He went over there for 2 weeks and worked with NBC, and he was going to different events and shooting video and I think it was a really cool move by him. I think he enjoyed the hell out of it. He had skied once before in his life, and he's over skiing in South Korea, and he's like looking around, taking pictures. It's really cool.
That's really cool. And he ate only Korean food, he said, on the Dan Patrick Show. And I love that. You know I love Korean food. I'm trying to get you into it. Beef and bop is the best food. I could eat nothing but that.
Beef and bop?
So it's like sort of like shaved beef, kind of like cheesesteak beef.
You start off with beef, I'm in.
Yes, and it has this red sauce on it. Now, I don't know what this red sauce is, brother. I'm telling you, it is no joke. Then you put some rice underneath and some kimchi.
What? By the way, I don't know what kimchi is.
Kimchi is sort of cabbage that has been marinated. I know that sounds terrible.
You know, I've had...
It's amazing.
That place we like in New York City called the Brooklyner, they make a kimchi hot dog.
Oh, yeah.
All I know is it tastes good.
Yeah, kimchi. And were you with us when Tony Reale's favorite place where they put the food... They cook it in front of you, Benihana style.
Yeah, you kind of cook it for yourself in a little hot plate in the middle of the table.
Yeah,
which is,
so
how'd they get insurance on that?
But it seems to work. I think Junior did a lot of that overseas. He was hinting at that.
Really?
Anything where you cook meat in front of you, come on, that's great.
I know. It seems like there's got to be a couple incidents. You get a couple sakis in you.
Yeah.
A couple ahis in your beers.
I think we're well on our way to recapping the Olympics properly, as it deserves to get recapped.
I'm surprised Tirico hasn't called in already when he hears how we're just dominating right now. All right, we got a lot to get to tonight. We got the NCAA hoops scandal, which you and I have drastically different first reviews of. We're going to talk about, you know, there were so many names named last week. You saw Michigan State and Duke at the tail end of this hit list of players getting paid from agencies. But all of a sudden, here you see, like, the golden boys of Duke.
Yeah.
I didn't see North Carolina, by the way.
I did not see that. But to me, then, Arizona came in as a tidal wave later in the weekend.
Arizona took charge late night.
Yeah.
The NBA home stretch, you have a Steph Curry take. We're going to gauge your interest or your excitement about your Sixers. Tiger Woods, you know, we always try to declare him back. We're going to talk about his 4 days.
Is he back?
Yep. I just watched Spurs-Cavs, man, regular season basketball.
That was a tough game. There is an exception. I understand exactly what you're talking about, but there are a couple of exceptions.
We're going to talk. You have a LeBron Jordan take that you've been sitting on. We got a lot of NFL offseason hit. The Blake Bortles contract, how surprised were you and how smart is it? Because I hear a lot of people patting the Jaguars on the back on this one. A lot.
Oh, you should go on my Twitter feed. It's like a
anti-Jaguar venom.
Oh, we got to get into this after the break.
I saw a lot of pro-Jaguar sentiment.
My Twitter feed is like, this is the craziest move in the history of the NFL.
Awesome. We must follow different people on Twitter. We have our bust metric that we talked a little bit about during the week, on the Leisure Midweek podcast. It's basically, we have a metric of red flags to points for a quarterback coming out of college and what likelihood he will be a bust. Real positive, real, you know, backing these guys up. That's us, Mr. Positive. I had the movie segment, and you have a part of that. You have the documentary that you watched.
Oh, yeah. It was sort of a Saturday afternoon NBC sports documentary on the 1988 Olympics with Rob Lowe narrating. I will give a full review.
Beautiful. And I have a movie that I watched this afternoon. Didn't do a lot. And I want to know a simple question. Is this movie great? And then there's some other things. There's a cheese segment we got. We have a new car in the family. We got a lot to get to, Pearl.
It's funny. I texted you today. I'm like, hey, what are you up to? You're like, not much.
Yeah, do you ever feel bad, like, admitting that you're doing nothing? Like, I don't with you because you're not a judgmental guy, and you're probably not doing a lot besides maybe—
No.
Now, do you ever tell me you're taking your kids to a museum and you're not really doing that?
No, I don't. I took them to a museum
because I do feel guilty sometimes.
No, I did, and I actually feel bad. I was at a museum today, American Natural History Museum, and I was like, oh, Paulie's going to feel guilty. But, like, Sarah, like, basically, my wife is like, you got to get them out of the house for 3 hours. I don't care where you go.
I took my daughter to get blueberry pancakes, so that's not a museum, but it is.
Your museum.
That's culture.
Yeah, it's total Paul Papp's culture.
Hey, weird illusion. I'm Paul Papp. He's Andrew Perloff. Pearl, before we get to a little NFL offseason action, which was pretty interesting this past couple days, had a little bit of an incident when I walked out of here to the course. Went to get some water at the... Yeah. And right outside our little radio studio here at NBC SN in Stamford, Connecticut, there's a row of about 8 or 9 younger people who are... They're on these computers, and they're doing, like, the digital broadcast of different Olympic events. And they're kind of in this temporary area. They're just outside the studio. We like to leave the doors of our radio studio open. It kind of gets some air to hear the building. And so if you're near us, you could probably hear us a little bit. We're a little loud. So as I go outside, this young lady goes, she gets going to close the door. I'm like, oh. I go, you don't like the show? And she's being a little, ha, ha, ha. She goes, well, I hear you guys 3 hours a day already. Meaning the Dan Patrick Show. I like that she was honest. She just didn't want to listen anymore.
Yeah, I think that's sort of what I was talking about. The vibe in here is a little bit like a little glum that the Olympics are wrapping up. There was a lot of energy.
But I thought we were entertaining that group of millennials.
Don't they know we're recapping the entire Fortnite right now?
This is the Olympic post-show party right now, the Leisure and Pabst and Perloff.
Fortnite, I believe, means 2 weeks, and it was 16 days. I just researched that.
Yeah, like a Fortnite on steroids. No.
Yeah, it's a big Fortnite.
All right. So what do you got? Now, let's start with the NFL offseason. How much of a surprise was it to you that Blake Bortles got locked up, depending how you look at that, by the Jaguars so quickly?
Yeah, I did not expect to see that headline on Friday. Was it Friday night or Saturday night?
I think it was Friday night. So 3-year, $54 million contract for Blake Bortles. $20 million up front. And he was going to get $19 million next year anyway. $26.5 million is guaranteed. 2019 is an affordable $16 million, according to Ian Rappaport. He has a Super Bowl MVP bonus, which is worth about $8 million. But here's the interesting. Next year, his cap hit is $10 million instead of $19
yep.
million. He's deferred some of the money by the new contract, and it actually gives the Jaguars an opening to add a player or two in this offseason.
Yeah, it's a really good deal financially. And if they're going to commit to him, you know, they're not going to – they didn't wait till March 14th when free agency starts, so they're obviously not getting into the Kirk Cousins.
Were you surprised by this?
See, I kind of thought they might kick the tires, but I'm going to play Monday morning quarterback. As soon as they made this deal, I'm like, oh, yeah, of course they're going to stick with Blake Bortles. They made it to the AFC title game. They almost won. And, you know, I was thinking about – people say they went far in the playoffs despite Blake Bortles, but it's not like the defense won 10-7. They won two shootouts with the Steelers and the Patriots.
He was 10-6 as a starter last year. He attempted 523 passes. That's a lot for a guy who, you know, but they dropped, it's about 100 less than he has in the past. They ran the ball a lot more with Fournette. 21 touchdowns, 13 interceptions. Not awful. His quarterback rating was...
not great.
84.7, which is actually up from the previous year. Of course, their defense is way better, put him in a lot better spots.
Yeah, his stats are not good.
He's not a bad quarterback, though, right?
That's pretty bad. 84.7, I mean, that's lower half of the league. Depends how you define bad. Now, in the beginning of the year, remember that the new coach was like, we want Blake throwing it as little as possible. And you saw that play out, Doug Marrone, and you saw them play very conservatively. So there certainly are a lot of Blake Bortles haters.
His passing attempts were down 15% last year, and they were 10-6. But, you know, once you have a running game, though, these days, look at what Drew Brees did with his pass attempts were way down this year, and the running game carried that team a long way.
It's a great formula.
Do you think that this is a business decision or a football decision by the Jaguars?
I think they wanted they had to stay with Bortles. Look how far they got with him. I mean, they were inches from the Super Bowl. If that last pass had got over the head of Stephon Gilmore of the Patriots, who knows? The Jaguars could have been playing the Eagles and could have given them a big game.
Had you heard of any other options for them?
Well, you know, I read today, everyone was a little surprised they didn't even look at Cousins. And then earlier in the year, there was the Eli Manning rumors because of Coughlin. But then that all sort of fell apart because the Giants recommitted to Eli.
Do you think they look at this? And I think everything is money with quarterbacks. I would say half of it is money. It's almost like, we can get Blake Bortles for $50 million, and he may be able to get us to the Super Bowl. And Kirk Cousins gives us a better chance, but he's twice the cost.
Well, okay, it's very interesting because now they can use their cap for that outstanding defense. Same thing, and I think the same thing applies to Minnesota. I think Kirk Cousins would be great with the Vikings, but do they want to spend $60 million on him? They have so many defensive stars to pay. Or do they want to spend $35 million on Case Keenum?
And you can go back a couple of years ago. Remember when they had to pay Russell Wilson and something had to go? Some of the players on the defense and offensive line had to go for the Seahawks. Seahawks haven't been that close to the title game in a while. A little bit of a while because they lost some offensive line and lost some defensive players.
Yeah, and look at Drew Brees with the Saints. After their Super Bowl, they had to pay everything to Brees. And I think you say same thing with Joe Flacco and the Ravens.
So it's not as much the quality of your quarterback. It's the quality versus cap hit.
Talking some Blake Bortles, talking some NCAA basketball in a moment. But before we get off of Bortles, have you ever heard of the analyst, Kian Fahey? He's a sort of a football analytics guy for ESPN.
Irish guy, right?
Irish guy, right. He is a Bortles, I think he's a Bortles hater. I don't think he'd be offended if I said that. He had this tweet. Blake Bortles played in an offense that did everything possible to hide him last year, talking about Jacksonville. I think that's a fair statement, although he did lose his number one receiver in Allen Robinson. He threw 35 interceptable passes in that offense. Only one other QB in the league through more. Now, Paul, I ask you, does there need to be a stat called interceptable passes when there's a stat called interceptions where it was 13? Or is that just kind of cruel?
I love that stat because interceptions are very faux. It could be tipped by a defensive lineman.
Sure.
Your receiver could run a bad pattern, which is tough to tell.
But I took it the other way. I feel like you're blaming quarterbacks. Like, he's saying that there were 22 balls dropped by the defense that should have been interceptions. See, I think that's a little mean. What you said is brilliant. I totally agree with that.
I wish they could judge passes. How many bad passes did he throw over the course of the year where a guy was open and he couldn't hit him over his head, too low, et cetera, et cetera? Because I go back to Peyton Manning's last year where his entire team covered for him in the home stretch.
Well, I watched Donovan McNabb with the Eagles in the aughts, and he would throw a ball that nobody was catching often. I mean, he had a pretty high completion percentage, but he'd throw it low. Sometimes quarterbacks throwing the ball low and uncatchable is not the worst thing if you have a great defense.
I remember the last year of Dan Marino, it was tough to watch. Dan Marino was throwing terrible footballs. He was old. He was beat up a little bit, even though he didn't get hit a ton in his career. He just didn't have it anymore. And, you know, he was one of those guys because of his short, compact throwing style. He couldn't crank up the power like he had when he was young.
But, okay, and Peyton Manning was like that his last year. But that's okay. If your quarterback can't complete the ball, as long as he's not throwing interceptions, I think he's okay. And I think that's what the Jags see in Bortles. It's like, he's not going to kill us. He's going to let the defense win the game.
Right, but you should always look to improve upon that and give yourself a better chance at every position. If you're going to go into the season with your biggest liability as your quarterback, then your defense has to win it for you. And Leonard Fournette, he's got an uphill battle next year. Leonard Fournette's never going to have a season where he averages 5.5 yards a carry with the quarterback.
What are you talking about? Bortles totally tore through Pittsburgh and New England. He was terrible against the Bills in the first playoff game. But maybe that offense shows up. I didn't feel like Fournette was the key. I felt it was Bortles.
So Bortles was sandbagging for the first 14 games, really lull the defense into a false sense of security, then unleash the hounds.
That's the thing. Blake Bortles, during the peak Blake Bortles hatred, the dude threw 35 touchdowns 2 years ago. That's a lot of touchdowns.
Did he throw 22 interceptions?
No, it was 35 and 18. Then he was 23 and 16 last year and 21 and 13. 35 touchdowns, I know a lot of it was garbage time, but that's legitimate numbers. Remember we had him on the Super Bowl set in San Francisco?
Yep.
And we're like, this is one of the young rising stars in the NFL. Then all of a sudden, the whole world turned against Blake Bortles.
Well, he had a lot of injuries at receiver, which really hurt.
Yeah, and he sort of lost some. Remember last preseason? I think we were debating, did you play Chad Henne?
Yeah, a lot of people were. All right, let's get to the big story of the last few days of the week. The story about this agency called ASM Sports Agency with a guy named Andy Miller and his associate Christian Dawkins. It came out during the FBI investigation of everything in college basketball that's going on, even going back to Rick Pitino, that they had paperwork. This guy Christian Dawkins, this agent, had paperwork, filed expense reports of paying all types of high school recruits, some that are in the pros now, like Kyle Kuzma for the Lakers. He got paid, allegedly, by the FBI wiretaps and the stuff that came out to Yahoo Sports. Lots of different money. What happens is these agencies front these kids lots of money, or their families lots of money, anywhere from $5,000 to $100,000. And they say, all right, we're going to give you this now. And then when it comes time to sign after college and you're the first round pick, you sign with us. It's a calculated risk because they don't have to sign with you. You can't sign a contract. You're handing them probably a bag of cash or, you know, an envelope full of cash. So the big story that came out on Friday night was that DeAndre Ayton, he's a big-time recruit, one-and-doneer at Arizona. The story is that in these FBI wiretaps, they had Wildcats coach Sean Miller, very successful and popular coach at the University of Arizona basketball, and Christian Dawkins, a sports agent for ASM, discussing paying $100,000 to ensure that Ayton would sign with the Wildcats. Now, they don't have money changing hands. They don't say it's a done deal. They're discussing the possibility of this concept, $100,000, sure he joins. Ayton's family, a lawyer representing the family of DeAndre Ayton, called the allegations involving the Arizona star freshman false and urged the FBI and NCAA and the university to come up publicly and clear his name. They say they're outraged. He didn't take any money. He didn't agree to take any money. He doesn't have any money from them or anybody else. They're unequivocal about this. They're not, you know, they came out and attacked the story. The other thing is, though, Sean Miller, they sat him down for the game Arizona the other day. It's on TV. They know what the fans are going
to
do.
That, to me, that was a little damning. That was Saturday night's game against Oregon. That's not a good sign.
Home game or away game?
I'm not sure if it was home or away. I probably away would have been brutal because you know how college basketball fans are. But, you know, what does that say that they sat him down, Paul? What was your reaction when you saw that part?
Well, it makes you feel a lot more guilty when a team takes you out of the rotation and sits down a successful coach like Sean Miller, who has a very good team this year and looks has Arizona basketball right in the thick of things every year. Did he discuss it? Did he do it? Was he involved? I'm actually kind of surprised that the coach would be actually talking on tape to someone. If I were a coach, I would never be the point person. You know, I would always have the deniability of one of my henchmen doing the work for me.
Well, Sean Miller's a younger guy. Maybe
a couple years ago.
Yeah, maybe he gets a little more into it. There's so many things, like you were wisely pointed out, we have no proof that money changed hands.
Right.
These are allegations and these are reports. And numbers on a ledger do not equal numbers that ever were exchanged.
And DeAndre Ayton's name is not on that list of players who got the money.
Right, so it could have been just a discussion, and we didn't hear it. And even the list, I heard Jay Bills point out something interesting. Just because you see that those numbers on a ledger doesn't mean that money ever changed hands.
I think that Arizona set Sean Miller down for a couple reasons. They want to cool the story down, and having him roaming the sidelines gives you a lot of B-roll and a lot of fan reaction to play with.
Mm-hmm.
I think they want this story to go away, and DeAndre Ayton goes to the draft. Business as usual at Arizona, and Sean Miller keeps his job. I don't think he's in any danger of being fired at this juncture.
Yeah, no, tell me what you think overall about this scandal, though. Do you think this is going to create significant change?
No. It's a very complex situation and very tough for the casual sports fan to follow along in the story. Who's ASM? Who's Christian Dawkins? Who's DeAndre Ayton? With the first story that came out months ago, the bow on that one was Rick Pitino got fired. That was easy. A big fish like Pitino took the hit.
Right.
Now, I could see Sean Miller maybe getting fired, and because, remember, you can't end the institution, that's the cash cow. You just fire some of the top players. And they'll fire Rick Pitino. They'll fire a Sean Miller to keep this cash cow going.
Yeah, so I think Sean Miller might be a casualty.
Maybe.
But, I mean, have we ever seen Duke's name in a scandal before?
And the accusation was that a Duke player had lunch with this guy, Christian Dawkins.
Okay.
That, you know, to the level of where Duke's involved.
Yeah, Wendell Carter.
Wendell Carter, a player at Duke, had a lunch with Christian Dawkins. And that is a violation. If Christian Dawkins, the agent, paid for his lunch, that's illegal. Now, if they split the lunch, it's not an illegal act to have a conversation with an agent.
Yeah, I mean, a couple of names that jumped out to me. Miles Bridges, of course, who is a sophomore, actually came back to Michigan State, and he's one of the few basketball players I knew coming into this season. And Maryland's Diamond Stone, of course, stood out to me, because if your last name is Stone and you name your son Diamond, tell me what you think about this.
It's tough, man. Puts a lot of pressure on that kid to be a star at something.
He's pretty good to be a Maryland. So
now he's averaging like 1.7 points per game with the Clippers.
See, I think this one is the big one.
Okay,
think it's going to cause some change.
Okay, like what? Off the top of your head, what type of change? Because I'm going to debunk.
Wow, of change? I think there's going to be coaches fired.
Yeah.
I think there's going to be the NCAA is actually going to start to monitor the money a lot closer. I think they're going to actually start doing their job.
I think the NCAA never catches people like this and only gets it when Yahoo does a story.
Well, FBI is doing the work and reporting it to Yahoo.
Right.
This one's messy because the FBI is in it.
It's weird that the FBI is in it. Why is the FBI dealing with college basketball?
It's all fraud. I mean, it's all tax evasion and fraud.
Right, man. There seems like there's bigger fish to fry. But I'll say this. I think that it'll teach people not to keep expense reports, not to keep ledgers.
Of course.
I think the agent will say, like, look, I'm still going to give this 17-year-old 20 grand. I'm just never going to put his name down on a piece of paper.
What do you think will happen with one and done, which has been sort of not directly linked to this, but of course comes up whenever you talk about the state of college basketball?
I think the solution for one and done, I'll save it to after the break, because there's a solution
Great.
For one and done, but it's terrible for college basketball. I hate it, but this is what I think is fair, but it's terrible. Paps and Perloff, the Leisureman. Winter Olympics wrap-up show. We are the featured show on NBC Sports Radio right now. There's no other shows they're talking about. This is the one they want you to listen to. You know, like Tirico's got his show coming up a little bit on NBC. This is the radio version of that.
Yeah, they tabbed Perloff and Paps and said, you guys, you've been watching a lot of this Olympics.
Right.
We want you to sort of encapsulate what the Fortnite in Pyeongchang meant.
Right. Like, be a wordsmith like a Costas, like a Tirico, like an Al Michaels. Which is us. I mean, that's us in a nutshell.
Very much. We're going to sort of, at some point of the show, we're going to use some big vocab words.
Sure.
Put this into a bigger perspective. Like, how does this compare to, say, the other last Winter Olympic Games, wherever that was held?
Yeah, in some other country.
Oh, Sochi.
Sochi.
Yeah, Sochi. Remember, Sochi was the one where they had two bathrooms in one stall? That was really weird.
Yeah, there was Pyeongchang had it easy.
I think the Winter Olympics sort of got back on track because I think Sochi had too many side issues. This one, I've seemed really orderly. I mean, the not is obviously we're on NBC Sports Radio, but NBC does an awesome job.
Oh, I mean, look, you don't. I didn't work for NBC for years, and none of us did. It's spotless, the coverage. I mean, you can get it live, you can get it taped, you can get it both. If you miss it, you could, like, you could watch curling live at 1:35 in the morning. Our good buddy Carolyn Mano is hosting. I'm texting her in the commercials. I said, we're up, we're watching. She goes, yeah, wake everybody up. And then you can watch it later. And
I watch it in the afternoon the next day.
USA Women's Hockey. If you didn't see it live with the shootout, you could see it again. You could see it on your phone. I mean, it's just, if you compare it to when we were kids, where you had to watch it live, mm-hmm. or you weren't seeing it.
How do you think they did the balance of live Olympic events compared to taped?
Well, they basically do both. They shouldn't. Now is the point where they don't have to choose between the two.
Mm-hmm.
They just say, we're going to show it live, and we're going to package it taped for prime time.
For prime time, yeah.
So you can either choose to sit down and just watch the prime time presentation or find your live event, which is basically just two channels, NBC or NBCSN.
Yeah, and I actually usually watch big NBC at night. Didn't mind it. And I was watching bobsledding one night. I'm like, wait, this looks really familiar. And I realized I had seen it that afternoon on NBCSN. But that's fine. I enjoy the way the primetime gives it a special sort of feel.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. You know, I think the big winner might be Chloe Kim, the 17-year-old snowboarder, because unlike other sports, hers is very easy for a lot of people in America to access. If you want to go snowboarding, it's not that hard unless you live in the South, deep South, or, you know, Florida. But you could still fly. You could fly to Park City in 4 hours from anywhere in our country. And I think that, you know, snowboarding, before Kelly Clark got into it, was a men's sport, a boys' sport, kid, you know. And then it's definitely become a women's sport. I think it's going to become a women's sport even more so now. My daughters were like, Chloe Kim's awesome. And my six-year-old said, I want a snowboarding lesson. I'm probably not the only dad who heard that over the past 2 weeks.
Oh, sure. I mean, I think snowboarding and skiing were already probably the two most accessible. Or which is more accessible, ice hockey or probably the snowboarding?
I would say snowboarding. I mean, there's ice rinks everywhere. I took my daughters went to an ice skating party.
Ice skating is still very accessible.
Yeah.
But it's interesting. And I mentioned that I saw this documentary on NBC on ice skating. Ice skating, and you mentioned this last week, has taken a little bit of a backseat to some other sports. It used to be, and it's still the last event. It's still the primetime event. But I don't feel like it has the buzz that it did when we were kids.
It used to be a sure thing. It was almost like heavyweight champion of the world.
Yes.
If you were a female and you were American and you won, if you medaled in ice skating, ice dancing, I think it's called ice dancing, you're instantly on a Wheaties box.
Right. So I saw this thing about the 1988 Calgary Games, and it was American Debbie Thomas against Katarina Vitt.
Remember it well.
And the whole world was focused on that. And then Brian Boitano was going up against some other guy named Brian from Canada.
Yep.
And it was in Canada. And those were like, that was the heavyweight fight.
Yeah.
Now it's a big event, but I feel like you're right. I feel like some of the X Games sports have taken a chunk out of that.
One of the things we were talking about earlier was the NCAA and this big scandal where this agency paid a lot of high school superstars. Here's what I would do if I ran the college basketball for everybody. If you're a high school kid and you're eligible, you can go in the draft right out of high school.
Sure.
We'll open that up again.
I agree. I'm 100% with you so far.
You have to give kids freedom to work. Now you'll say, well, why don't you give them that in college football? There is a big difference in physicality of college football.
I think you
football.
Have to do it in college football, too.
You may have to.
I think legal. I am shocked that no kid has ever sued, because what's the reason?
Because most of them don't think they're ready either at age 18.
Right. There's very, very few. Basketball, a lot more kids are ready than football.
Almost 100% more ready, because it's not even close to physicality. Basketball is not a physical sport. It's a contact sport. It's not a collision sport.
Also, 18-year-olds are so much more trained now because of AAU. I know everyone insults AAU. They have so much more basketball. Marvin Bagley Jr. has been playing, or the third, sorry. Marvin Bagley Jr. the third has been playing so much basketball. He is so seasoned for an 18-year-old.
He's ready to roll. If I were college basketball, NCAA, NBA, I would do this. You can go pro at age 18, you go right to the draft. Or if you go to play college basketball, you must play 2 years.
That's your radical plan? We've said that on this show like 20 times.
And you pay them minimum wage, 20 hours a week.
Oh, okay.
You're only allowed to do 20 hours a week in your sport. We'll pay you minimum wage, but you can't ask for any other part of the pie.
So it's almost the equivalent of working in the cafeteria or working at the gym.
I got paid minimum wage to work at my school paper while being a journalism student. So I was practicing my craft in college for what I wanted to be for life, and I got paid $5.35 an hour.
I got paid nothing working for the Dartmouth, and I want to go back and unionize because that was terrible.
The Daily Egyptian was legit. But imagine that. Now, college basketball is going to suffer big time because you're not going to have any more superstar pro players. 5 years, 10 years from now, they'll do the NBA Finals and say, now out of Land O'Lakes High School.
Well, that's what it was like 10 years ago when Kobe and KG, and there was a huge trend, Tracy McGrady,
Kwame Brown,
go down the list. So, and college basketball got hurt. There were a bunch of years that were really dry in that sport.
But let's just pull off the Band-Aid, let the kids go pro if they want so they have the right to work. And college basketball, you got to do 2 years. At least you got some storylines of the guys who do show up are there for a little bit. You get to know them a little bit.
You get a Grayson Allen, or you get Miles Bridges came back this year.
A bunch of two-year players. We won't know the difference. We'll watch the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, I mean, you'll miss. And also, are those one-and-doners that exciting? Is Andre Ayton adding anything?
Most of these guys don't make the tournament. Ben Simmons didn't make the tournament.
Yeah.
Markelle Fultz didn't make the tournament.
Yeah.
Let's pull the Band-Aid off.
Fultz never should have been the number one pick, but that's a different story.
We should have said that like a year ago. All right, stick around. We got Humid Takes. We got Leisureman Approved, Not Approved, and a White Hot Movie segment. And one of the guys on the show, I don't know which one, is considering giving up cheese.
Dun, dun, dun.
Try getting out of your car now. Leisureman, NBC Sports Radio.
Winter Olympic recap show. Paulie decided he wants to move to Switzerland and take up the luge. I want to go to Canada and be a curler, of course. Actually, we both want to be curlers.
That'd be great.
Although Paulie doesn't think it's going to quite catch fire or sweep the nation.
Well, oh, no.
Yeah, look at you, sweep the nation.
Yeah. There you go.
Okay. So I've been in some hot water, Paul, on social media lately.
Go on.
A few days ago, it was during the All-Star game, there was an Uber ad, a commercial for the company Uber, where Kevin Durant and LeBron James are riding, and Carrie Champion's in the front seat asking them questions.
Right.
It was really interesting.
I just saw it 10 minutes ago.
And LeBron and KD agreed that it was an honor to be one of 24, and they admitted they were 1-2 out of those 24. They're the best two players.
Yeah, the conversation was kind of casual about the All-Star game and how it brings back memories and gets you fired about the sport board. And LeBron said something like, the top 25 players in the country, and then you got 1-2 here.
Yeah.
And she goes, ooh, a little cocky. And he's like, hey, you know, and they're like, hey, truth hurts. It's the truth.
I put it on Twitter, the team of LeBron and Durant does not have a great record against one Steph Curry in the playoffs.
Right.
I got murdered. Everyone's like, and I said, do you honestly think that it's a no-brainer that Durant and LeBron are 1-2? People killed me on social media, which struck me as odd because it's almost like it was 3 years ago where Steph Curry was unquestionably at the top of the league. He's the first ever unanimous MVP in the history of the entire league, two-time MVP. The Warriors won 73 games with him, then he hurt his knee in the playoffs. And all of a sudden, it's like he is not a factor, and I just found that surprising.
Well, I think I'm going to stay with me a little bit on this here with Steph Curry. Steph Curry came into the league not really a star. He was at Davidson, was not a traditional star.
He was like a Jibber Fredette.
Yeah, kind of a Fredette type. And then he kind of hit a slow burn to his career. His first 3 years, he was not Steph Curry yet. If you look at him, he had some ankle issues and just was not the man yet. And LeBron came in like gangbusters. Durant came in like gangbusters. They're both tall. They look like what NBA stars are supposed to look like. Taller and bigger than you. You know, Steph Curry is kind of like Russell Wilson or Drew Brees, and they'll always be underrated because of their size.
Yep, that's the big issue right there.
They don't fit the mold of the NBA star, which is taller, dunking, more athletic than you, highlights. Steph Curry dunks twice a year maybe. But he can outshoot both those guys in his sleep.
Yeah, and he's improved as a point guard.
And shooting is more important than physicality.
Yeah, and today it's a function of today's game. I also heard something interesting. You know, he's been battling some health issues. The announcers, I think Mark Jackson was doing the game on Saturday night. They played the Thunder and destroyed them. It's supposed to be a big ABC primetime game. It was kind of a dud. They theorize, you know, watch out for Steph Curry catching everybody in the MVP race. I'm like, Steph Curry, the MVP this year? Then I looked at his numbers. He's averaging 26.8 points per game, 6.5 assists, and 5.3 rebounds. And his rebounds have been on the rise. The dude's shooting 42% from three.
Right.
And he jacks it up all the time.
And you know he's shooting it.
Like you know he's shooting it.
Right.
He just takes more shots than Durant.
Well, the other thing that hurts Steph Curry is at age 27, the 2015-16 season, I think he was the single most interesting story in sports.
Yep.
Remember we used to go to New York City for the Dan Patrick show? Yeah. And we'd be like, we got to find a bar to see where the Warriors are playing. This is regular season. This is not playoffs. Steph Curry was so hot. He averaged 30.1 points per game that year. He was taking 11 threes a game, which was way up for him. He was averaging 6.7 assists while shooting 30 points a game. 5 rebounds, 2.1 steals, led the league. He was by far the best player. Not only the best player, but the most entertaining player.
Yeah.
I haven't been that entertained by a player since the days of Bird Jordan.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to include Magic because Magic didn't score points like that.
LeBron's more of a slow burn. LeBron's been LeBron for all these years. He's not. He didn't like come onto the scene like that.
Steph Curry made you afraid to miss his games three years ago.
Now, my argument is Steph Curry hasn't gotten worse at all. He just added Kevin Durant to the mix and decided to share his shots.
Yes, and whenever you add a guy who averages about 28 for his career, everyone else's stats are going to go down a little bit. Steph Curry is down 3 shots a game compared to 2 seasons ago.
Yeah, but he's still... his
stats are great.
Yeah. Although his shooting percentage that magical year at 45% from 3 was crazy. You know, he's added a thing where he dribbles around like Curly Neal and puts the defense into a pretzel. Now, here's the other problem, too. You know, who's better, Curry or Durant? It's sort of 1A and 1B on their team. They both sort of lower themselves... Not lower might not be the right word. They put their ego to the side a little bit for the better of the team.
You know what's funny? Even though one is 6'11 and the other 6'4, Curry's the killer. Durant's not a killer on the court. He is a cool customer that can't be rattled. He is a matchup nightmare of all-time perspective. I mean, you can't cover him inside or outside.
But you could cover him when he was on Oklahoma City. In the fourth quarter, teams got into him. And because you could double-team him, you could just play up on him if he got by you, then now you can't double-team him. You can't do anything because you got Klay Thompson, Steph, and Draymond.
I think that it comes down to is that Kevin Durant is not an alpha dog. He scores and has the ability with anybody of all time. He's like a taller Larry Bird. But he likes the team mentality. He likes sharing. He likes being a cog more than he likes being a leader.
Mm-hmm.
And he likes being kind of a quiet assassin. And Steph Curry is the opposite. He likes to chew his mouthpiece in your face. Mm-hmm. He likes to walk down court and shake it out.
Yep.
And he likes being the alpha dog. You know, his dad was never that. His dad was a cog, a really good three-point shooter, but his dad, Del Curry, was a cog player, not a feature player.
Yeah,
And Steph's the opposite.
Yeah, don't you think that's a function of the way the game is played nowadays? And I think here's the thing with the Warriors. I don't think that their players are better than other teams. I think it's that they move the ball so well. They're so well coached that everybody gets involved. I don't know why doesn't everybody play exactly like them? Why do teams dribble down the ball and do isolation play?
Well, yeah, I don't know about that. You remember you have 3 of the best shooters in recent NBA history on the same floor. They kind of lucked into Klay Thompson and Steph Curry. Other people passed on them.
Mm-hmm.
They kind of fell to the Golden State Warriors, and they hit on those two. Then they also hit on Draymond Green, this Swiss Army knife player who's just kind of a jerk to other teams.
But in a great way for your team.
That's exactly the way I would play if I were LeBron, if I were Draymond Green.
You say they hit on them, but how do you know that it's not just that the system accentuated their strength? Because the ball movement is why they can do this. If you didn't move the ball... There was a quote in the beginning of the year where Steve Kerr said, the most important stat, the one stat we look at is passes. We want to have 300 passes a game.
Right.
No other team. It seems so obvious. And you know who played a little bit like that? I think Jordan's Bulls had a little bit of that too, where Jordan was obviously a dominator. But they were all about, hey, let's get some ball movement so you can't double-team Jordan at all times.
Right. As much as people think Jordan was a ball hog, he liked when other guys score because it made it easier for him to dominate other ways.
Exactly.
And then when it came to crunch time, it was like, okay, we know who's getting the ball here. Unlike the Warriors, let's not kid each other. Jordan would kick it out to guys, but only if he had nowhere to go.
Yeah, but he did like ball movement early in the game, especially. Then as a Sixer fan in the 90s, I always saw this thing where this thing changed in his eye in the fourth quarter, and he would say, you know what, I'm just going to take it the whole 6 times in a row.
Right. I'll tell you, I'd rather watch Steph Curry play basketball any day than Kevin Durant.
Yeah.
No offense.
Yeah, of course. And also, too, right now for me, the one most watchable team is the Warriors. Last night, it was a fun game, even though it was a blowout. Today, the Spurs-Cavs felt like a slog.
Yeah, I think, unfortunately, because of Steph Curry's career, how he came in out of Davidson, his first 3 years, he wasn't great. He was just good. He will never be considered the best player on earth.
Think he was 3 years ago?
I think he was.
I found some tweets where a lot of experts like, he's the best player in the league.
Right, but it was for one season. So it sticks out like a running back having a 2,000-yard year.
But the only reason his numbers went down is because he brought in Durant.
Yes.
Which, by the way, now I'm thinking he shouldn't have done. They don't need Durant to win a title. I'll tell you that right now. Why would they? It makes it easier for them.
It makes them be able to relax more during the 80-game season.
Yes, and then now they're going to win 6 titles.
Right.
Do you think that they're going to win? I mean, I'm not saying putting you on the spot for prediction.
I don't like the Rockets at all beating them.
No, I know. I
can't. At all.
And I like the Rockets. I enjoy watching them. And the Cavs. That's the only other team.
I'm not ready to shut the door on LeBron James yet because 4 games he can muster stuff up. Still, I think.
Yeah.
It's unlikely.
You're not going to bet that new car, which I want to get into.
How was your weekend? It's not that faux thing you do in the office with Jim and Larry on Monday morning where you don't really want to hear it. I actually want to hear, how was your weekend?
Yeah, my weekend was pretty wild. A few things happened.
Wild.
So it was the wife's birthday.
Oh, yes.
On Friday.
And you had the triumvirate of St. What is it?
Valentine's Day, Super Bowl week, gone for Super Bowl week, and birthday, all within a 12-day period.
Break out the wallet.
Oh, there's no way out of it. So this year, basically, we have a big problem in New York City getting babysitters. Basically, you have to spend a fortune to get a babysitter.
How much an hour?
It's $18 an hour. But that's not it. It's the car. You have to drive. You have to make sure they get to wherever they're going and pay for their car. And usually, you know, that could mean to Queens or deep into Brooklyn. It's
Holy
not cheap
cow.
To get anywhere. So we prefer not to use babysitters. We need like a good teenager, but we'll get to that later. So I'm like, you know what? Let's do an afternoon date on Friday.
Lovely.
So 4 o'clock, we get together for tapas and drinks at a place called Sugarcane in Brooklyn. It's a hip new spot. And you know what? You could get into any restaurant at 4 o'clock.
Oh, that's not a real hot time.
No, it's awesome.
They're rolling up the getting the menus together.
Yes. So usually this restaurant, we can't even sniff. It's a half hour just to get a seat at the bar. Right. It is like the hot spot. Overlooks the water in Brooklyn. And we had a great time from 4 to 6.
Ah.
Got home, the kids.
Early bird.
Now, I got one of the most unromantic presents in the history of presents.
You bought one of the most?
For my wife. I got her earrings.
You didn't buy her like a vacuum, did you?
No. See, I know. We actually need some new pots, but I didn't get that. I didn't want to get into that whole ball game. It is literally, and I know you hate when people say literally, but this is the most unromantic present ever.
Cash?
That's pretty unromantic. I got a fancy Sonicare toothbrush.
Oh, oral health care is very romantic.
You think it's romantic?
No, not at all.
It's this very mechanical. She had a problem with the recession. She mentioned it after the last time she went to dentist. So I paid the big bucks. This was not a cheap toothbrush.
It shows you're listening and paying attention to her needs.
Yes, and I'm also paying attention to my long-term wallet needs for her dental health care.
Fine.
So, yeah. But am I right? Is that as unsexy as a present as you get?
Yes, but you were smart enough to get that and a piece of jewelry. You're a veteran. Yeah. You've been doing this for a while.
You know what I should have done? You know how you always feel weird about buying lingerie for your wife?
Right.
Like you don't know if it's appropriate or not. If I had paired the Sonicare toothbrush and lingerie, that would have thrown her off balance. I think I could have gotten away with it.
Right. My wife's birthday is about 10 days from now. Mm-hmm. We're going to Vermont. All our friends are coming up. We're going to tear it up a little bit. I haven't thought about a gift yet because we just finished both Valentine's Day and Christmas, and I went to the well pretty hard. It appears she's pretty well set up for the 2018. But you still have to get her something.
You do, because you feel like she might even tell you, oh, it's not a big deal. You already got me something. Oh, you know that means nothing.
Bros, if your wife, girlfriend ever says, oh, don't worry about it, I don't really want anything, that's the biggest lie in the business.
Yeah, when the day of comes, you better get a card.
Card.
You better have some sort of party, like a little thing with the kids, at least planned.
Right.
Bare minimum.
The showing of effort is more important than the gift itself.
100%. And they don't care how much you spend.
No.
The card is more important than the gift.
I actually, for Valentine's Day, I was happy to be up in Rhode Island. I bought my wife some flowers in Rhode Island, and then I stopped at another place. And she goes, oh, you did that all up there while you're doing all this house stuff and da-da-da-da. I got points for effort, even though the gift was pretty, like a C+.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I bought flowers for the birthday at Whole Foods. They were on sale, but she doesn't need to know that.
It's the effort. You're getting it done.
How about you, Paul? How was your weekend?
Well, let me ask you a question. I went to one of my daughter's friend's birthday party. I took my daughter to one of her friend's birthday parties. These kids are all turning 9. So I've been going to these for the past 4 or 5 years. It's always like a bounce house or a bounce you, they call it, or tumble jungle. And the kids are jumping around on like trampolines. And I often go out there with the kids and jump around. And I'm the only dad who does it.
Uh-huh. I could see that.
And I don't know whether it's right or wrong. The kids think it's funny. And I don't really intrude on their time. I don't try to hijack their party. But I kind of jump around a little bit because I like jumping around on the trampoline as much as any 40-year-old does.
Now, how are you viewed as sort of like a creeper, or what's the story?
No, see, I was hoping you wouldn't say that word because I don't.
No, of course not. That's
my daughter loves it, and she encouraged me to go. She goes, "Dad, it's so cool that you come out there and play around. All the other dads are stiffs." She actually used the word stiffs, which I respect for a 9-year-old. But then they had an ice skating party, and all the adults are there in their Vineyard Vine vests and sitting on their phone, ignoring kids. And I brought my skates. I laced them up.
You brought your own skates.
I BYO'd my skates.
You brought your own skates to a kid's birthday party.
Yeah, because...
Okay, now...
And but remember, I'm not like an ex-hockey player. I stink at skating. You've skated with me.
Yeah.
I got a free pair of hockey skates about 6 years ago. They've been sitting dormant in my closet.
Let me ask you a question. If a kid had a bowling party, would you bring your own bowling ball if you had one?
Shoot.
You can't bring your own skates. All right.
Well,
I don't mind you jumping around. That's cool.
Right.
But you can't bring your own skates to a kid's skating party.
So there's like one woman out there and a man who are like the moderators of the party that worked for this ice skating facility in Fairfield, Connecticut. And all the kids went out there, and they're all struggling and having trouble. And there's probably 25 kids and two monitors. And the monitors are not really doing a whole lot. And all the other parents are standing along the boards. And I'm like, I'm going to lace them up. And I went out there, and I was fumbling around a little at first, and I started having fun, and I started helping some of the kids out. And I didn't think I was doing anything wrong.
Did you consider the fact that usually at a party the rentals are free, that you could have rented skates there?
I know, but I felt bad that I had these skates that I got for free, luckily. And I was like, this is a perfect time. I laced them up and put on the foil.
At no point did you throw any little kid into the boards, I hope.
No, I stayed out of the way.
Yeah. No, I like it. But I know the real reason you're doing this.
Why?
You don't want it small talk with the parents.
You see everything, man. I'm telling you.
Oh, I knew it. The second that you played with, of course you play with your daughter. You love your daughter. They're a great time.
I like my daughter a lot. I love her and like her. I was out there.
You guys are pals.
And some of her friends are funny kids. And I was out there. Yeah. And they're like trying to push me down. I was like, I went down a couple times.
Oh, the small talk at a birthday party. And I'm a good small talker. Brutal.
I would do anything. I would rather go out with a bunch of 9-year-olds and get dropped on the ice 8 times, which is what happened, than sit there and talk with the dads about. You know, got to overseed now because the lawn season's coming, or all that kind of small talk and over politeness that parents have to do with each other.
I know it's weird because we're probably all about the same level of interesting people, but it's not easy to be yourself in these situations.
I know, and it's not like I'm above it or trying to belittle the parent small talk. I just don't want to participate in it. And if I could go and put a pair of skates on or jump in a bounce house for a couple minutes, I'll do it.
Yeah, but thank God for sports in those situations. That's when if you could start a good like NFL conversation or something, you're safe.
If my daughter goes to a birthday party where they're going to walk on hot coals, I'm taking my shoes off and walking on the hot coals.
Well, yeah, or you would bring your own like special hot coal shoes because apparently that's how you roll.
Got to dust those up.
The Leisureman, I'm Andrew Perloff. He's Paul Papps here on NBC Sports Radio. If you're near a TV, I hope you're watching NBC right now. It is the closing ceremonies of a great winter games. Pretty much everybody in the NBC family, except for these two guys over there, packing their bags, trying to get the plane out of South Korea.
We're in charge of the home front, us guys.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We're wrapping up on the radio side while Mike Tirico does the TV duties.
It was like a simulcast. It's like Tirico's throwing it back and forth to us.
Do you think Tirico will say anything about us right now?
Hey, I don't think so. He doesn't want to take away from the broadcast, but I think Tirico will say, those of you who don't have a TV or don't own a television, feel free to tune into the Leisureman on NBC Sports Radio. For those who don't own television, both people in America.
Yes. So, or you're stuck in a car. So it's been an interesting sports weekend. Of course, the NCAA scandal has sort of overshadowed everything. A lot of NBA going on. We're starting to pick up NHL. I think once the Olympics are over, we're going to start really kind of focusing on NBA and NHL as the playoffs approach. College basketball, it's time to learn about college basketball.
But I also think it's going to be really hardcore NFL draft stuff really fast.
Combine starts next week.
Is the draft late April or early May?
It's late April, but wait, trust me. Next week, it's a huge draft. It's going to be a wild draft because there's so many quarterbacks. Indy is going to be rocking next week. It's going to be awesome.
I think this is a really fascinating draft, and we could save it, but because all the quarterbacks have question marks, and they're all very different. You go from Josh Rosen's concussion issues, Sam Darnold's safeness but not explosive last season at USC. Baker Mayfield, you can go on for a day.
Yeah. Lamar Jackson, you can go on for 2 days.
2 days, and there's a lot of baggage there with because if you critique him, is it racial? Yeah. Can you critique him
no.
without being painted as if it's a racial stereotype?
Yep. Josh Allen.
Josh Allen from Wyoming, who took a big step back this year. You thought he'd just rip up the Mountain West, and he just was average.
Yeah, it's going to be a great draft, but let's hold up on that because tonight's about basketball because the hottest team in the land is Philadelphia, the city of champions, and I understand we have a call. They're about to tip off against the Wizards right now on ESPN. We have a call from, I believe, Ryan in Ohio. Now, I'm curious why he's called about the Sixers, but Ryan, what do you got?
I was wondering if you think if Embiid stays healthy, you think you like their chances of making the playoffs, staying at the 60 that they are right now?
Making the playoffs. Good
making
question,
the playoffs? Mark. What, are you kidding me? Of course. Wait. Now, Ryan, we got to go farther than that. This is a town of champions, Philadelphia. Do you think we're going to make a run in the playoffs is the only acceptable question. Why did you say making the playoffs?
Young team. That's all I got. They're young. Embiid, and you need to stay healthy with that foot. That's what you don't know. You got the Pistons lurking there.
Ryan, let me take this. Thank you, brother. I appreciate you calling. You know, like 12 days ago, they were the ninth seed.
Mm-hmm.
12 days ago, they were the ninth seed. I know they've won eight in a row or seven in a row or whatever. But this is you wouldn't be surprised if Embiid got hurt and missed a month. You'd actually be surprised if he didn't.
Yeah, that would be bad. They have a lot of talent, though. They could survive a few games without Embiid.
Sure.
It's interesting because the Pistons, I was kind of I'm a big Blake Griffin fan. And the Pistons with Blake Griffin, they have a lot of talent on that team. They can make a run. Then you got the Heat, Bucks, Sixers, and Pacers, and actually pretty much everybody all in that mix. It's going to be tough. I'm telling you, the Eastern Conference, he's exactly right. But I think they make the playoffs, don't go anywhere.
All right, let me ask you. Let's say that you knew your Sixers are going to lose in the first round of the playoffs. Who would you want to see them face? Raptors, Celtics, Cavaliers. From an interest standpoint.
Oh, of course the Cavaliers.
That'd be pretty fun, right?
Yeah. Does anybody want to see anybody face the Raptors in the playoffs?
No. I tell you, if Cavaliers-Sixers are the first-round matchup, which right now that's what it would be, I'm tuning into that one.
Ooh, would you rather have that or Cavaliers-Bucks to see Giannis and LeBron? Although, I don't know if Giannis is playing as. I mean, he's in the MVP picture. He's averaging, like, ridiculous numbers.
I find Joel Embiid so entertaining on and off the court that I want to watch him for seven games or, you know, five games probably against the Cavaliers.
Bucks not doing it? No.
They're okay. They're fun.
Just let me give you Giannis's numbers real quick. 27.8 points per game, 10.4 rebounds per game, and 5 assists per game. Okay. You're right, though. Okay, let's get into Leisureman Approved, Not Approved. Now, this segment, follow along at home. We take a topic, maybe one of the big topics in sports, and we say whether we approve of it or not approve of it. What do you got, Paul?
I got to give me 10 seconds to do a little research because before I go too willy-nilly with this.
Well, I love willy-nilly. Give me some willy-nilly.
I know. Steph Curry is the second best player in the NBA right now. Leishman approved? Not approved. Right now?
Not approved.
You think he's better?
Yes.
I knew you were going there. I wanted to go there. You think he's the best player in basketball?
Oh, you have to understand, Paul. Don't tread in these waters. I was like, the venom I got on social media for saying this last week was out of control.
See, I like him better than James Harden because I think his game where he plays a little bit of defense, but just passing lane defense, he does enough on his team.
Well, you could kill him on defense.
Right.
Oh, I have an interesting, real quick on Curry. There's a lot of people saying, take it to Curry. That's how you beat the Warriors. The problem is, if you take it to Curry, you're going to get the tempo going faster. You're playing right into the Warriors.
Draymond
hands.
Green will pick up the scraps at the end.
Well, they're going to let up 120 points, but they're going to score 140. Okay, go ahead.
I wanted to say that, too. That's why I was looking. I was like, LeBron James just feels like the biggest star in the world, superstar basketball player. Yeah. He's the Michael Jordan of our era. He is the Michael Jordan of our era. He's a household name worldwide. Steph Curry is not quite as famous, not quite as entrenched as a star. I think he's a better basketball player right now. Right now, I think he's playing better basketball than LeBron James is.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. What about Durant? He's a bit of a problem because he's about as good as Curry.
Yeah.
They almost have identical numbers. It's weird.
I think that in a game where, let's say, you're down 7 points in the fourth quarter, Steph Curry is way more dangerous than LeBron James right now and Kevin Durant and probably Harden as well. I think,
and Westbrook too. You got to think about.
I think Curry's level of confidence is off the charts.
Yeah,
and that makes him dangerous.
I think. Okay, let's be realistic though. Let's step back for a second. If I said the top three players in the league in some form, some stew, are LeBron, Curry, and Kevin Durant, do you feel comfortable with that?
I think you got to put in Harden because the way he's playing right now, offensively.
See, I think he's just a shade below. I think his numbers are crazy because of Mike D'Antoni, and he's the only star on that team. I just think that when he's hot from three, it's ridiculous, but he just doesn't do it quite as much as Curry. Then again, the playoffs, this is where the playoffs, you could be right, but is it really, if in a given game, if any of those three guys that I just mentioned were better than the other one, would it shock you? Like,
oh,
you're
no.
talking about shades of gray.
Shades of, like, preference.
Okay.
Just because I think that, again, Steph Curry, I think, is almost underrated because of that one big season, and mm-hmm. he's not doing exactly what he did 2 years ago.
Yeah. Okay, I love
it. Go ahead.
Mine is Blake Bortles related. Leisureman approve or not approve? The Jaguars appear to be making a long-term commitment to Blake Bortles, but this isn't really the long-term commitment that some people are portraying it as. Now, they're saving money in the short term, and they have a 3-year deal, which they're not even really committed to for 3 years. So this is sort of, they're sort of holding hands with Blake Bortles, but they're not embracing him.
Approved. It's a pretty smart financial move. They're not breaking the bank for Blake Bortles because he's definitely not worth it, but they may not have a better option. I'm gonna up the ante on the Blake Bortles leisure report and approve. The Jacksonville Jaguars will regret sticking with Blake Bortles in the near future. Approved, not approved.
Not approved.
I don't think they're going to be better next year. I think they're actually going to have a little bit of expectations, and I think they're going to have a drop-off early in the season.
They have a tougher schedule next year, too, and they have a tougher division.
And their young guys are really cocky, and they got a taste of stardom. I think they're going to regress a little bit, even if they get all their wide receivers healthy. I think they're making a mistake sticking with Blake Bortles, and they should have tried to find a better answer.
Give me an example of one of those answers. Kirk Cousins?
Yeah, or even going after Case Keenum.
Keenum would have been a nice fit there.
I think Keenum's a safer player. He's not as tall as Blake Bortles, but again, I think Case Keenum will make less mistakes during the 2018 season than Blake Bortles will.
Bortles was relatively clean last year. Like, he didn't throw a lot.
Not the first half.
So
there was games where I watched where he was throwing like 5-yard out patterns and the ball wasn't close.
All right, let me play defend Bortles a little bit. He beat Pittsburgh 30-9 during the regular season. He beat them 45-42, and this is probably the most talented team in the league, Pittsburgh. Mm-hmm. He helped them score 45 points. I know some of it was on defense. He was one throw away against the Patriots, and he did not play bad against the Patriots.
Yeah.
He was close enough that you don't turn the page immediately. It's too soon.
I'm just not sure. I'm not sure if he's ever going to be a great player because I think he's gotten roughed up the past year and a half, and he may be a little shell-shocked.
I agree with that. Although he probably gained a little more confidence in his players. But I think the way the deal is structured, it is more giving the Jags some options. And also Kirk Cousins, that's a big risk. To go from Bortles for next to no money, I mean, this is going to be a huge bargain. And you have to pay your defense. To put all your money in Kirk Cousins, that doesn't seem like an easy answer either.
Can I come back with one more?
Yeah, please, go ahead.
Approved, not approved, NFL-wise?
Yeah.
Marcus Peters, the star, and I say star, defensive back for the Kansas City Chiefs, who's young, mm-hmm. who's talented, who's been nothing but a very good player on the field the first couple of years, must have a lot of issues that we don't know about if the Chiefs are trying to get rid of him at this juncture in his career.
Yeah. I think that goes without saying. You always hear stories about him being a pain in the neck for the coaching staff or the management. It's been going on since he got to the league for the most part. Because you watch him on the field as like a fan, you're like, well, this guy's awesome.
According to Adam Schefter, the Rams are expected to send draft picks to the Chiefs in exchange for Peters.
Yeah, and trust me, Andy Reid is as good a player's coach as you'll get. He is great at dealing with players and sweeping things under the rug. So it must have gotten so bad that they just had to move on. Now, I'm actually... Leisureman approved, not approved. Can I take that and move on?
Go ahead.
One more. I've never been more excited about the Chiefs in my life. They're losing Marcus Peters. They're losing Alex Smith. They're losing their longtime linebacker, Derek Johnson. Finally, we get to see something new in KC. We're not going to see 10-6 and an early exit from the playoffs. Shake it up.
Leisureman approved, not approved. You're saying this because we ran into Patrick Mahomes, the new young quarterback of the Chiefs on Radio Row in Minnesota, and he came up to us and started chopping it up, and he remembered us from when we interviewed him last year, and you think that now that Patrick Mahomes is a friend of the Leisureman.
No. I do like your thinking, but I really do. I am excited for the fact that the Chiefs might be 4-12. It's been so long since we've had a chance to see a bad. They have been steadily okay for so long now, Paul. It's time, and it doesn't hurt that Patrick is a close personal friend.
Close personal friend of the Leisureman, specifically Andrew Perla. All right, my last one. I got one more real quick. Leisureman approved, not approved. Tiger Woods is back to being a solid golfer that could win an occasional event. But we shouldn't hope for much more than that.
So you're saying kind of like the years between when he beat Rocco Mediate and he was like number one in the world. He won like 3 or 4 tournaments in a year.
I don't think he's back to that.
No, I don't think he's back to that. I hope so. I'd be happy with that.
I think he's old and injured and will never have the confidence that he had. And his confidence was what made him great.
Does he win another tournament? Does he win a tournament this year?
Tournament?
Yes, like, you know, a smaller one.
I would say likely one, sure, because it is hard to win just once on the PGA Tour. Everything has to go right for you for 4 days. Look, he finished par at the Honda Classic, finished in 12th place on a no-pressure tournament. That's a very good sign.
Yeah.
But again, I think age, injury, and but again, there was a point in where he thought he was the best athlete on earth, not golfer, athlete. And he lived the life the way he wanted to. He golfed. He owned people. He goofed on people. He'll never have that level of confidence back.
Let's pick this up when we come back. I want to talk about Tiger for a second because I really kind of want him to do more than that. And I think he might be able to do it.
Just two guys living the dream. Paul Pabst, Andrew Perloff, the hottest time slot in sports radio, 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern. We are dominating the closing ceremonies here at NBCSN. The party's downstairs. Mm-hmm. They're waiting for us to get there.
Well, the executives had to be relieved that we'd be in the building today to sort of put a bow on the Winter Olympics.
Tirico handles the TV side, the Leisureman handle the radio side, and put the Olympics to bed is what the boss has told us.
Yeah, I think we have an interesting perspective because those guys, they were too close. They were in South Korea.
You got to be 7,000 to 8,000 miles away on a couch watching all the events. That's how you can really chop them
up. Yes, we understand it as most Americans did from our couch. We had pretty much the best view possible.
Keeping it real, we're just average guys. And what we're doing right now is we have two 25-inch screen TVs. One of them is standard definition. On one of the TVs, we have the Washington Wizards. I still want to say Bullets. And against the Philadelphia 76ers, they have the exact same color combinations. So it's hard to tell which team's which when you first look out there.
Yeah, it's interesting, too. We just had a little confusion as to which these are a very small TV. They're very far away. Who's J.J. Redick? Who's Dario Saric? And who's T.J. McConnell on the 76ers? All, can we say white guys?
Yeah.
From 25 feet away, it's kind of hard to tell.
These white guys look the same.
J.J. Redick's filling it up. He is back from a leg injury, Paul. I was just reading.
Sure.
Playing very, very well.
You say so.
He's kind of exactly what that team needs. I mean, he is so important to them.
That was a weird one-year contract. He could have gone anywhere and picked up 10 large, and he went to Philadelphia.
You know, there's still a lot of people speculating that LeBron will look seriously at Philadelphia. I don't see it at all.
No. J.J. Redick, he was a Clipper for a long time, right?
Yeah.
Living a life in L.A.
Yeah.
But does he live in Brooklyn or have a house in Brooklyn?
He lives 9 blocks from me.
And he
plays in Dumbo, Brooklyn.
And he plays for the Philadelphia 76ers.
He commutes.
Games.
That's what he said, I think, on his podcast. He has a really good podcast. I don't know if he's still doing it, but I believe he commutes. So we saw him on the street this summer.
Why didn't he join the Nets or the Knicks?
Because the Sixers are better. Maybe it was money.
Yeah.
They offered him a lot of money. So he was on the street pushing his little baby around. He's got a young baby. My wife made it very, very clear where her priorities lied. She said, "You are going to the curb if this man is interested in me." He is extremely good looking person.
And
he's huge, too.
You both are 6'4". You both have fantastic jump shots. You went to an Ivy League school. He couldn't get in one. He went to Duke.
You know, we might both be 6'4", but if you put the two of us together, we're different species. He carries it so differently. I've seen him up close a lot, but I've never had the guts to actually say anything to him, although he looks perfectly nice. And also, he's got a sleeve of tattoos on one arm, which is, I think, gives him a big advantage. He's kind of a badass.
Have you ever had a friend who's like a crazy good-looking, like one of your buddies who's like, you know, you can even accept it, that he's just a way better-looking human than I am?
I don't know if I go way better, but I definitely have a friend who's good looking. Like, if he wants the girl, it used to be, if he wants the prettiest woman in the bar, that's his. Like, that's okay. And we're all fine with that.
Right. I had this buddy named Mike, and he's still one of my great friends. And when we hung out in New York City, he was the alpha dog.
Yep.
Like, he walked in, all the girls were, whoa, who's that? And then his, you know, bunch of B minuses, the buddies with him, we were a bunch of B minuses.
Now,
we're fine with that.
How is his personality?
He didn't have a lot of openers. He wasn't good with the ladies.
Didn't need him, right?
I guess he didn't need him. But once the girls started talking, he had good rap.
Okay. So he could get, once he was talking, so he was a funny guy, normal guy.
But our other buddy was a professional juggler, and he did it for a living. J. Peter Loftus, Pete the Juggler.
Yeah.
So Pete was the showman of the group and pretty good looking himself, and he would juggle to break the ice with the girls, and it worked.
Well, I know. Well, have you ever read that book? What is that book, The Rules?
No.
So there's a book, or The Game, I can't remember what it's called. Neil Strauss, who's a really, really outstanding writer, wrote this book about, basically there's this underground society of guys who use these tricks to seduce women. Now, it was a very, and I know it sounds terrible, but it was a very important book. It was about pickup artists. And a lot of the advice was do things like juggling or be a magician because you just stand out from the crowd. Then there was a lot of stuff that wasn't as pleasant in there. Do you, ever heard of this?
There was a
show on VH1 about it called The Pickup Artist 2.
Oh. Well, yeah. I'll tell you, my buddy Pete Loftus, he was like such a good juggler that he had an agent and was in commercials. Mm-hmm. He was one of the best jugglers on earth and still is. You could Google him, Pete Loftus. And we would be in a bar, yeah. And let's say there was a couple empty Bud Lights on the bar. We would dump out to make sure all the water was out of it, the beer was out of it, and we'd give him three bottles. And I'm like, Pete, do a little bit. And he'd be like, all right. And he was well-dressed. And he would just start juggling in the middle of a bar. The people at the bar were never very happy about it, but they were so enthralled by how good he was, they would let him do it.
And the women were attracted to this?
People were attracted to it. Like groups of people would come and start talking to him, and then they'd ask him to juggle stuff, and it worked.
Yeah. I mean, so what was your big trick? What was your move?
I didn't have any moves.
Didn't have any moves?
Well, my move was like to work at the bar. Like I was the bartender or the doorman, and then I had like the open license to talk to people.
That's a good move. It's hard to compete with an employee of the bar.
Right, because they're sober and they're there all night.
I had a move.
What's your move?
I had a group move that worked like a charm. Can you imagine? So you walk into a bar, the way, at least when I was in my 20s, it worked. You're with a group of dudes, mm-hmm. You come into a bar, and there are various groups of women around, or groups of men and women. But actually, so the key is, and like what happens is in a New York City bar, like you have to try something. So I would always say, all right, guys, don't worry, I got it. I'll go talk to them.
You were the alpha. You're the lead dog.
So I walked over to the girls, or the women, sorry, and I say, hey, my friends are kind of afraid to come up to you, but they wanted to talk to you. I don't really want to, but they wanted to talk to you.
I don't really want to.
So I've immediately done two things. I've made my friends look like betas, and I made it clear that, you know, I'm not that interested, but they are.
But
that's a pretty good move.
Yeah. Did they think it was funny?
Yeah, it always worked.
Man, that's not bad. I think one of my moves was if I saw a girl I wanted to talk to, and I saw her talking to another guy, I would make fun of the other guy when he bailed. I did it a handful of times, and it worked. It actually worked with my wife. My wife was standing there, my wife, Dana, and she was, when I met her in, you know, 12 years ago, she was standing there, and the guy she was talking to had, like, real spiky hair, weight like a fake tan, and he had, like, a tight T-shirt on. He had one of those,
no,
like,
don't say it was there.
He had a tattoo that was, like, a barbed wire.
Oh, no.
He had, like, a barbed wire on his biceps.
Oh, you had a layup.
It was kind of a layup, and he was talking to her, and I was trying to get around him to get a beer, and I saw her like, whoa, I'd like to talk to this girl. And then I saw him, and she really was not interested in him. And as he walked away, I just turned to her and I go, you know, that guy had more product on than you did. Oh. And she laughed, and I was like, you know what? When you hear the laugh, it's kind of like a door opening, and you better have some game after that. And we ended up talking, and it worked, but I made fun of the other guys.
Yeah, yeah. Now, but the funny, that's sort of your expertise, making fun of other guys.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it fits
in. That's
all
I got.
But you're right. But the way you describe that guy, you're basically like Andy Reid and the Philadelphia Eagles taking over for Rich Kotite. You had such a low bar to jump over.
But you never know. The dude was kind of like, you know, he had big arms and, you know, he had spiky hair. You don't know. You don't know. Maybe some girls like that.
Yeah, but the barbed wire tattoo, there's no time that worked.
Yeah, I would never have one of those because you don't have biceps, you can't have that.
And even so, even if you do have biceps, do not, that's a leisureman tip for sure. No more barbed wire. I don't think people do that anymore, though.
Do you think it's more common to not have tattoos or have tattoos if you're in your early 20s?
Have.
Like, most people have them, right?
I think most people have them. My sense, yes.
And you never got one?
I never got one.
Were you ever tempted?
Yeah, in college, a bunch of buddies went to do it. And I was tempted, but I just got busy or something and did not do it. Also, I'm extremely pale, so I don't know what the...
Well, they show better on you. They would show better.
Yeah. I don't know. I guess I wasn't that close. How about you? Did you ever have a moment where you were about to do it?
Never really, and I kind of like tattoos. My dad had a couple. He was an airborne ranger, but he was a big, strong dude. I actually dated this girl who worked for a tattoo magazine, and I could have got a tattoo for free.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't even the cost, which it can be costly. And I just never thought of anything like... I guess I'm too fickle for anything that's permanent. You see how the way I go through cars and all that kind of stuff. I was like, there's nothing about, I don't want to like get, you know, Chicago Bears tattooed on me and all of a sudden they move to Tulsa.
Yeah. No, you are not a person. And also too, like you can see 10 steps ahead to what's going to go wrong with the tattoo. You have that innate ability, so I could see it not working.
If there was some type of guarantee when you went into the tattoo artist that it's going to look awesome, like some, but there is no guarantee with that.
There certainly is not, and we've seen enough bad ones. Paul, that was a lot of fun tonight. I feel like we really did justice to 2 weeks of Winter Olympics. Put a bow on it, as you will.
It was great that NBC picked us to be the hosts of the post-Olympic wrap-up celebration for NBC Sports Radio. I never got an email about it or talked to about it by anyone in actual management, but I feel that's what they meant.
Yeah, unofficial official. Are you going to miss the Winter Olympics?
Yes, I always miss the Olympics, but that's why it's great, because it's never too much. You're never sick of the Olympics.
Yeah, this was a great one, too. I got really in a rhythm of watching the primetime, whether it was live or not live. I will miss it a little bit. I'm ready to turn to some NFL Combine next week, a little bit of hoops.
Ooh.
So things are not going to slow down in the sports world.
Most importantly, will we get any leftover Olympic swag from the PR guys?
Yeah.
Todd Harris, yes. Mano, I think, could hook us up.
Just a matter of time, Paul. We're going to be wearing the gear before long.
Rebecca Lowe, help a brother out. Talk to you later. We're the Leisurman.